Rabbi Beryl Wine has a series entitled Streets of Jerusalem, a walk through history, as he literally takes you through a, literally may be the wrong word, as he takes you through a walking tour, so to speak, of the different neighborhoods of Yerushalayim. And for those of us who are somewhat familiar and those of us who are not familiar with Jerusalem, we get an added explanation as to why these streets are named the way they are and what we could learn from history just from the names of the streets that we walk on and ride on when we are in the holy city of Jerusalem. The first lecture deals with the neighborhoods of Rechavia and Shari Chesed in the heart of Jerusalem. And we present it to you here at JM in the AM. Information about Rabbi Wine's lectures, 1-800-499-WEIN or rabbiwine.com, rabbiwein.com.
Now, this lecture series, which deals with the history of the streets of Jerusalem, is being dedicated in memory of two matriarchs of their respective families by their grandchildren who live here in this neighborhood in Yerushalayim. Both women passed away this past year, 57-61. Ruth Friedman, Rivka Bat Yaakov, grew up in America and lived in America and raised a family at a time when it was very difficult to remain an Orthodox Jew in the United States. But she accomplished the task, was very active in the community, worked for organizations, and raised her family to be Shomrei Torah and Mitzvot. And Rachel Bas Yaakov, Rachel Erlbach, who escaped from the horrors of Germany and also came to America, she also was able to establish a Jewish home, and she was zocheh to see three generations of her family, bonim uvnei bonim, oskim batorah v'amitzvos, and therefore it is an honor for us to dedicate this series in their memory. The land of Israel, as you may have noticed, is different than other countries in the world. In the United States, for instance, streets are usually named either numerically, 1st Avenue, 2nd Avenue, 54th Street, or they are named after physical, geographical, topographical incidents that they describe: Broad Street, Wall Street, Mountain Avenue, High View. Those are the typical, and then if you come to the new richer suburbs, so then they're named after relatives of the subcontractor who did the paving. And naturally, there are in every city in the United States, there's a Washington, there's a Jefferson, there's a Lincoln Street, etc. Here in Israel, very few streets have anything to do with the geography or the topography of the neighborhood that they live in. You don't have a street that's, Rehov Hahar. It somehow doesn't fit. And most of the streets, therefore, are named after people or after events. Gedud Alamed Hay, so the event of the 35 Haganah soldiers who attempted to come to Gush Etzion and were ambushed, or they're named after the members of the fighting organizations or the Army of Israel. But very rarely do they have a geographical, topographical name. Now, in the time of the Temple, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, just the opposite was true. We find almost none of the streets in Jerusalem were named after people, but rather they were named Street of the Marketplace, the Street of the Cattle Market. The main exception that we find is that in the temple itself, there was one gate that was named after a person, Shar Nicanor. Nicanor was a Jew from Alexandria, and therefore he had this Greek name. The Alexandrian Jews were pretty much Hellenized, even though they were observant, but they were modern Greek. And Nicanor was a wealthy man, and he donated doors to the temple for the gate. And he had very expensive doors that he donated. And the Talmud tells us that he placed the doors on a ship. And it seems from the story in the Talmud that he himself chartered the ship to bring the doors to the temple. And the ship got caught in a storm. And as we read in the prophet Jonah, the sailors wanted to abandon the cargo, to jettison the cargo in order to make the ship lighter, to be able to withstand the waves. And they took one of the doors, this enormously heavy door, and they threw it overboard. And when they came to throw the second door overboard, Nicanor was so overcome with emotion that he said, if you're going to throw the door over, throw me too. He lay down on the door. And because they were afraid, either that they would not get paid if they threw him overboard or other reasons, so they did not throw the door overboard. And somehow the storm abated. And when the boat came to dock at Jaffa, they found that under the keel of the boat, that it was stuck to the boat, was the door that they threw overboard in the sea. So that both doors were able to be brought to the temple and were installed. And the rabbis, the Gemara's in Psochim, the rabbis thought that this was miraculous. And not only miraculous, it was a symbol of the a sacrifice of a Jew on behalf of the temple. And perhaps because he was an Alexandrian Jew, and Alexandria always saw itself as a rival to Jerusalem. Alexandria had its own temple, its own Beis HaMikdash. The Alexandrian Jews said, who needs Jerusalem? We're in good shape here in Alexandria. Because of that, the rabbis called the gate Shar Nicanor, the gate of Nicanor. So that was a gate in the temple that had the name of a person. But otherwise, all the other gates, Shar Amayim, Shar Ashpot, all were utilitarian names. One was where they brought the water in, one was where they took out the garbage. You didn't have any dramatic names. And when the Romans came, and the Greeks, and so then they gave the streets their names, the Tyropian Way, other streets that were in Jerusalem, the Cardo. But there were no names after people. However, when the Jews came back 120 years ago, 130 years ago, 150 years ago here in Yerushalayim, then they began to name the streets after people. And tonight I want to discuss our immediate neighborhood here, the finest neighborhood in Jerusalem, Shaarei Chesed and Rechavia. These two neighborhoods that now adjoin each other. So you have to imagine Shaarei Chesed sitting out in the middle of a field completely empty on all sides. Even the Wolfson buildings weren't there. Nothing. Completely abandoned. And in 1903, through the efforts of Jews in the exile, this plot of land was purchased on behalf of the religious community, because the religious community then was by far the largest community, and it was the community that did most of the building. And they moved out of the old city. The old city was very crowded, and there was no room for expansion. And also the Arabs, for a change, were not friendly. So they began moving out in the 1860s. So you had the Neve Shananim, Montefiore's project. You had Yamin Moshe. You had Nachlat Shiva. Nachlat Shiva was seven Haredi, we would call them today Haredi, the Haredi Jews. Seven of them bought plots of land and began a neighborhood there. Slowly they began moving outside the walls, and the direction was always towards the west. In the 1880s, Meir Shorim, Bet Yisrael, what today is Geula, those neighborhoods were founded. And what happened was that as the children of the people who lived in the old city married, I mean, the same thing that happens today. So today you buy in Ramat Beit Shemesh, or you buy where you can't afford to live in Jerusalem. And therefore the next generation begins new settlements. So that's what happened then. That's how Me'er Shorim began, and that's how all of these neighborhoods began. So in 1903, they purchased Shari Chesed. It was a square, the measurements are Turkish measurements, so it's not metric and it's not English, so I can't really tell you how much it is. But what is interesting is that they subdivided it into 200 lots. But the architect who did it had a piece of paper that was only large enough for 139 lots. So they only built 139 lots because they didn't have a piece of paper large enough to include the other 61 lots, which today probably is worth money, but it just shows the poverty of the time. In 1903, when the dedication took place of Shari Chesed, the great Rabbi Shmuel Salant, who was then close to 100 years old and who had not left his house for 3 years, insisted upon being carried to the dedication ceremony because of the importance that he felt that this neighborhood would have in the development of Yerushalayim, and because he came, so all of the other great Rabbonim of Yerushalayim, who many times did not attend the fairs together, all came across the entire spectrum, and neighborhood was dedicated. But the buildings didn't begin till 1908. And if you'll notice, Shari Chesed is built like a compound, a fort, a castle. There were walls around it and gates. You can still see one of the gates on Rehov Shari Chesed. So Rehov Shari Chesed is one straight wall all the way down. Then there is Rehov Diskin in back, is a straight wall all the way around. And then you have Rehov Hagro, is a straight wall all around. These were walls, and the walls were there to protect them from Arab marauders, because they were all out in this completely unprotected, uninhabited area, and they were subject, therefore, to any marauders that wanted to come. So in order to safeguard themselves, Shari Chesed was built almost as a walled city. Now, today the walls are not as visible. Some of them have come down. And today we don't see it as walls. We just see it as attached houses. But if you'll, next time you're on Diskin, and you look at the back of Shari Chesed, you'll see what I mean, that it is built simply as a medieval fortress, as a medieval castle. Inside this castle, therefore, there were courtyards. There was not a system, it wasn't built that automobiles would someday have to go there, and you can see from the streets today that it is very difficult to navigate an automobile in Shari Chesed. The streets are extremely narrow, and part of being narrow, there are two reasons. One reason is because it's a very hot climate, and therefore the fact that the street is narrow and the buildings impinge upon each other provides shade in the summer. And the second reason is simply because of the fact that they wanted to conserve space, and they were accustomed to the Middle Eastern style of narrow streets, which exist in all the major cities of the Middle East. And also they came from the shtetl in Europe, which also was not famous for its boulevards or parks or anything else. And so that was their mindset when they built here in 1908. Let me read to you. So the original, the right to build came with a protocol. And you had to sign the protocol. And in the event that you violated the protocol, the committee that organized Shari Chesed had the right to take your home away from you. And among the committee, Rabbi Naftali Porush was one of them. That's why Rehov Porush exists in Shari Chesed. Other great Rabbonim, it was mainly rabbinically founded. So I have here a copy of the statement that you have to sign. I don't want to read all of it to you, but I just want to read a few salient points. Number one, The person pledges that no violation of the Sabbath will occur, not publicly nor privately. And he takes upon himself the responsibility for his family and for his guests. Number two, that no one will shave their beard. Number three, that no one will go without a hat or a head covering in the street. Number four discusses that the women will dress modestly. So you have here this protocol which really implanted itself on the neighborhood. Because if you have to sign this kind of a protocol, then it automatically excluded those that did not want to observe this type of lifestyle. And so Shari Chesed was founded for this group of people. And it was money was collected from all over the exile for Shari Chesed, because most of the people who moved in were very, very poor. They were Talmidei Chachamim, they were scholars, but they were very poor. They couldn't even afford the minimum rent that was involved in having an apartment there. And therefore, Shari Chesed began as a Gemilas Chesed. And the name of the organization was Gemilas Chesed Shari Chesed. Because what they did is they loaned you the money every month that you paid the rent back to them. Now, how that works economically, I don't know, but it only works as long as you're getting money from outside the land of Israel to finance the thing. But that's how the neighborhood began. And that's how the neighborhood took on its character. One of the nice things that they say about Shari Chesed is that it's Meir Shorim with a smile. It always had a great number of elegant Talmidei Chachamim who lived there. The Rabbonim have always been superior Rabbonim. And it therefore implanted itself with a stamp, with a character that has lasted until today. The main synagogue is the Beit Knesset Hagra, which still exists today. That's the original building. I'll give you an example of how loath they are to change it. A number of years ago, they wanted to repave the floor when you come into the Hagra. So there's a room on the right hand where the minyan is at 7:15 in the morning. And then there's a room in the left hand, and then there's a room upstairs. So they repaved all the floors. But the room on the right hand, where Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had prayed, where the Magid Rabbi Shvadron had prayed, where Rabbi Rosenthal was the Rav, etc., the old Sharech, they refused to repave the floor. They said, this is a holy floor, because such holy people walked on the floor, so what if it's up and down, bumpy, you can't clean it, you know what? How does that come into consideration in comparison to the holiness of people who trod upon this floor? So therefore, if you want to, you go into the Beit Knesset Agra on the right side, and you'll see the original floor that was built in 1908. It's almost a century old now. There are discussions in the minutes regarding lectre, which means electricity, because originally it was all candlelight and kerosene lamps, and whether that was considered too modern. If you go into Shari Chesed today, they still have the Turkish clock in the place where you daven, even though nobody can figure out Turkish time anymore. But they still have the Turkish clock, and so, you know, the 7:15 minyan meets at 19 after 9 on the clock. So how that works. But that's an example of their loyalty to how the neighborhood was established and for the purposes which it was established. So in the public buildings were the Beit Knesset Hagra. There was a Talmud Torah, which existed in what is today the Kahal Hasidim. The mikveh, which is to say the same original mikveh, though it's been redone a number of times. And there was a matzah bakery, and that's it. And naturally, they had a makolet, and they had a laundry, all of which is pretty much in the same area where these establishments are located today. Now, when it came to name the streets in Shari Chesed, So first of all, there weren't many streets because most of the streets are alleys. It's a courtyard type of arrangement. But nevertheless, they when the British came in the 1920s, so the British insisted that every place has to have a name. It has to be properly done. So the system that the British used was that the committee that was in charge of the neighborhood, all the Jewish neighborhoods were run by local committees. And though the committee chose the names, later the Iriah would choose the names, but that's the way the British did it, and so the Arab neighborhoods had naturally Arab names, and the Jewish neighborhood had Jewish names, and the British neighborhoods, where the British controlled, had British names. So for instance, if you go down towards Baca, by the Anglican Church, so you have all Patterson, Lloyd George, those are the names because that was the British, that's where the British officers lived. But in Shari Chesed, they wouldn't name it Patterson or Lloyd George. So we have the Hagrashul is on the Rehov Beit HaKnesset, the street of the synagogue. But then there is Rehov Hagra, named after the Gaon of Vilna, because the founders of Shari Chesed were all Prushim. They all were descendants of the Lithuanian Jews, the students and disciples of the Gaon of Vilna, who had come at the beginning of the 19th century. And the customs of the Gaon of Vilna, till today, exist in Shari Chesed. And because they exist in Shari Chesed, they spilled over into Rehovia also. So for instance, our synagogue here, the Knesset HaNasi, which has a mixture of people who founded it, nevertheless follows in the main the customs of the Gaon of Vilna regarding the Nusach of the Tefillah, what you say, what you don't say, etc., because of the fact that it is located in proximity to Shari Chesed, which is completely under the influence of the Gaon of Vilna and his descendants. We have Rehov Porush, named after Naftali Porush, who was one of the founders of Shari Chesed. But you have also a street, Kahanov. That was named after Moshe Nechemia Kahanov, who was the Rosh Yeshiva in Eitz Chaim Yeshiva here in Yerushalayim from 1867 to 1886. And that street is named after Rosh Yeshiva. And the main street in the back, Diskin, so there are two Diskins that are famous in Yerushalayim, a father and a son. The first one is Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin, who the street is really named for, though there is a square off the street. In Israel, that's how they do it. And when they run out of streets, so then they make the intersection, they call it a square, and they're able to put up another name. So his son was Rabbi Yitzchak Yeruchim Diskin. Now, Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin was the Brisker Rav. He was the Rav in Brisk after the Beis Halevi. He was the Rav in Brisk before Reb Chaim Brisker, before Reb Chaim Soloveitchik came to Brisk. He was a very, very great genius, a great Talmud Chacham, and he was a very strong-willed person who was always involved in controversy. And he was a fighter. He fought against the Haskalah. He fought against what he felt was the breakdown of Jewish tradition. He refused to compromise. And therefore, in his community, in Brisk, there was a large element that no longer found him favorable to be the Rav. And he had a Rebbetzin that was his match. They even say that she was more than he was. One of my, if I ever get the nerve to do it, I'm going to do a series on Rebbetzins. Beginning with. So they had great enmity in Brisk. And they were their enemies finally informed against them on essentially trumped-up charges to the Russian government. And the Russian government came to arrest them, and they left about 15 minutes before the police came. And they fled from Brisk, without any money or goods, etc. But then he said, as long as we're leaving Brisk, we're going to go to Yerushalayim, right? I mean, there's no reason to stay in Russia. And he came to Yerushalayim, where he was a very, very important and influential figure. And here also he was a person of controversy, but because of his greatness and because of the fact that the other Rabbonim here in Yerushalayim were much more passive people than he was, and therefore they, so to speak, got out of his way, he had a far greater influence than would have been predicted simply on the basis of a new person comes, and especially to Yerushalayim, Reb Shmuel Salant is the Rav. You got all the great Gaonim sitting here, and but Reb Yeshua Leib, more than anyone else, put his imprint on the community of Shaarei Chesed and Meir Shorim and Geula, and till today, many of the ideas that he promulgated, no compromise regarding Jewish education, no change in the old system of the Cheder, and not allowing any sort of secular studies in Jewish schools in Jerusalem, etc. He was the one who fought all of those battles, and so even today, almost 100 years later, those ideas have great currency and have strong influence here in Jerusalem. So that was the father. The son, Reb Yitzchok Yeruchim Diskin, was even more than the father. And he is the one who led the battle, so to speak, against Rav Kook and against the ideas of the Yishuv HaChodosh, of the new Yishuv that was then coming to Eretz Yisrael. And Rehov Diskin, as I always say, you know, God has ironies. There, in God's world, always has ironies. So I always thought to myself, most people don't realize the irony, but that the five Wolfson buildings, etc., should be built on Rehov Diskin has an ironic twist to it, because he would not have been happy to see those buildings, and he certainly would not shop in the co-op. So that's the father and the son, and that's Rehov Diskin. Rehov Diskin originally was a small, narrow street. It's been improved since the Wolfson buildings were built. It was made a through street to lead out to the boulevard of Ben Tzvi, but on the other side, it's still a dead end. It doesn't go anywhere, and it is the back street to Shaarei Chesed. It provides the protection for the wall that encloses Shaarei Chesed. So now let's move to us, to Rehavia, which is also a very interesting story. First of all, why is it called Rehavia? Rehavia is mentioned in Tanakh in only one place, in Divrei Hayomim, which all of us know by heart. So in Divrei Hayomim, the Tanakh records for us the genealogy of Moshe Rabbeinu, who were his children, who were his grandchildren, etc. So Moshe had two sons, Gershom and Eliezer. So Gershom had a son that eventually became a priest for paganism, Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson, which the Tanakh tells us so that we should always realize that nobody has any contracts, nobody has any guarantees, that everything can happen and everything does happen, but that doesn't diminish Moshe, and Moshe Rabbeinu is still Moshe Rabbeinu. The second son, Eliezer, so it says in Divrei Hayomim, in Perek Chov Gimel, Posig Yud Zayin, Vayiyu Bnei Eliezer, the descendants of Eliezer, Rehavia Harosh. The first one was Rehavia. So the Medrash says it was the only son that he had. The Pasuk says, V'lo hoyal Eliezer bonim acherim. He did not have other... So bonim acherim can mean other children, or it can mean other sons. The Medrash said that he was blessed with seven daughters. He had one son, Rechaviah, and he had seven daughters. So what happened was that the architect that laid out Rechaviah had seven daughters, and he wanted to have a son. So as a zgula, as a charm that he would have a son, he named the neighborhood that he was hired to lay out Rechaviah. So you didn't know that you lived in such a neighborhood. I have not been able to determine whether he actually ever had a son or not. But that is why the neighborhood is called Rechaviah, because of this posuk in Shira, in the posuk in Divrei Hayamim, where Moshe's grandson was called Rechaviah. So our neighborhood is named after Moshe Rabbeinu's immediate grandson.
This is the end of Side 1.
JM in the AM, halfway through a lecture by Rabbi Beryl Wein regarding the streets of Jerusalem, in this case the neighborhood of Rechaviah and Shari Chesed. Information about Rabbi Wein's lectures, 1-800-499-WEIN or rabbiwein.com. 2 minutes before 8 o'clock, actually 2 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Wednesday morning broadcast at JM in the AM. I welcome those of you tuned in around the world on the NSN app, on your computers, etc., etc. Let's try and conclude this lecture by Beryl Wein on the streets of Jerusalem, speaking about the neighborhood of Shari Chesed and Rechaviah, and all that we could learn from the names of the streets in these Jerusalem neighborhoods. Later on, we'll speak about Project Inspire. Josh Halickman, the sports rabbi, will join us from Israel. Plenty more coming up between now and 9 o'clock. It is a 9 days format here at JM in the AM as we continue with Rabbi Beryl Wein.
Rechaviah was founded in 1921. It was 8,400 square meters originally, which is not a lot. And it was bought by the organization called Hachsharat HaYishuv. Hachsharat HaYishuv was a Zionist organization, like Keren Kayemet, like other Zionist organizations, that was in the business of purchasing land from the non-Jewish owners. Now, most of Jerusalem was owned by the churches. And even today, 40% of the city sits on land still owned by the churches on which long-term leases were negotiated. For instance, the Knesset is sitting on church land, so they have a 99-year lease. And I would imagine that when the 99 years are up, the rent will go up. I think that's a pretty safe bet. This entire area, all around here, is basically church land. So Rechaviah, the first 8,400 square meters, was purchased by Hachsharat HaYishuv from the Greek Orthodox Patriarch in 1921. Now, all the purchases that were made by the Jews were always tainted with the accusation of corruption. In other words, they paid off the patriarch in order to be able to buy it and give, and that the church would sell it to them. And there's a whole scandal going on now. And now there's a new patriarch. I saw an interview in the newspaper with him today, which he says he's not anti-Israel, he just wants more rent. So that's understandable. So this Hachsharat HaYishuv bought this piece, which is on until the border of Keren Kayemet Street. In other words, where we are. Then, in 1923, 2 years later, the Keren Kayemet bought the other piece, which is Keren Kayemet Boulevard, down to King George, and that corner where the Jewish Agency and the Keren Kayemet offices are, that was purchased in 1923, and that was also purchased from the Greek Patriarch, and that was bought with the specific idea that the government buildings, the Yishuv, the central organizations, would build their offices on that land. So therefore, this boulevard is called Keren Kayemet LeYisrael Boulevard. simply because the Keren Kayem had bought it. And it ran down to King George. Now, what was doing with King George? The English naturally named it for King George V. And the English, the British, made that the main street in Jerusalem. And they made Jaffa and King George to be the commercial center, the shopping center, Ben Yehuda Street. And all of that was done under Sir Ronald Storrs, who was the British High Commissioner after Sir Herbert Samuel. And that was meant to be the main street of Jerusalem. And therefore, they named it after King George V. Now, it's also obvious that they did not imagine the automobile traffic that ever would exist in Jerusalem, because it was open space. You could have made a wide street. They thought they made an enormously wide street, because if you compare it to the streets in Shaarei Chesed, this is just a tremendously wide street. But if you compare it to what type of street is necessary today, where you would have to have a minimum of 4 lanes of traffic, if not 6 lanes of traffic, and here you have, in the exquisite Israeli invention, 2.5 lanes, so then you have this very narrow street, which is the main street of Jerusalem, and to a great extent remains today as certainly the main street of Jerusalem. There was an architect by the name of Richard Kaufman, a Jewish architect who found favor in the eyes of the British as well, and he came up with a master plan for building Jerusalem, and he called it Ir Ganim, the city of gardens. He wanted to make Jerusalem a garden city. So they passed a law that no building could be higher than 4 stories. And they passed a law that all the buildings had to be covered with Jerusalem stone. And they passed laws regarding setbacks. Shaarei Chesed, for instance, is built to the street because there was no recess. But they passed zoning laws that the buildings had to be recessed. And he is the architect not only for Rehavia, but for Beit Vegan, for Beit HaKerem, for a number of other famous neighborhoods here. And Kiryat Moshe, Shoshana Tzion, Yafei Nof, all of these neighborhoods were designed by the same man, by Richard Kaufman. And his idea was that they would build single houses, or at the most, 2-story houses, and every house would have its own garden in front, and it would be recessed off the street, and that Rehavia would be a show place for Jerusalem. It would be the example of what the beauty of Jerusalem. That was his idea, and because that was his idea, leaders of the Jewish community and the wealthier class immediately purchased lots in Rehavia to be able to move in. And since it was also in close proximity to the buildings of the Jewish Agency and the Keren Kayemet, so it became the place where such aristocratic people as us live. And today it's where the President of the State of Israel has his home, and it's where the Prime Minister's official residence is. It retains that character, and there are cabinet ministers that live in our area because of the fact that that was the original intent as to how it would be built. Now, I have the original map here of Rehavia, which he drew, and it became a question, what should the streets be named? What should the streets be named? So it's very interesting. We're on Rehov Sishkin. Rehov Sishkin really stands out that it doesn't belong, because all the other names of the streets in Rehavia are names of great Spanish Jews from the Golden Age of Spain. Poets, Talmidei Chachomim, Rabbonim, Gaonim. But Sishkin, but the reason that Sishkin is here is because of Keren Kayemet Boulevard. Keren Kayemet Boulevard was purchased, as I mentioned, by the Keren Kayemet, and Sishkin was the president of the Keren Kayemet. And therefore, you see, you always had also a problem, which, you know, we in Rehavia, for instance, I mean, in our neighborhood, more or less, they pick up the garbage. And once in a while, they pave the street. And, you know, you get city services much better than you do in other neighborhoods in the city. And if they wanted to have the streets paved, and the Keren Kayemet was paving Keren Kayemet, so they wanted to have the other streets paved also. So as an inducement, the Ussishkin was called Ussishkin. And it helped. The neighborhood developed. Now, where do they get their water from and their electricity? Came from the Ratisbon Monastery, which today is the Lev Rehavia, on Keren Kayemet Boulevard. So that entire area is still owned by the Ratisbon. It's a French church. The monastery itself has only three or four people living in it. But they own this tremendous amount of property. And they, in fact, that new apartment building that was built is all leased. It's built on a lease from the church, for which the church gets a ground fee every year of substantial money. So the Ratisbon Monastery had water. They had an independent water system. So Rehavia drew its water originally from the monastery, and it drew its electricity from the monastery because they had generators. Eventually, a citywide system of both water and electricity was set up, which naturally included Rehavia. Now let's take a walk down Ramban Street. Why was the main street called Ramban when it could have been called something else? For instance, Ben Maimon Boulevard originally was called Rambam, but because of the confusion to the taxi drivers between Rambam and Ramban, so they changed the name to Ben Maimon. So they could have had the main street could have been Rambam, and the side street could have been Ben Nachman, right? They could have done it that way. Why did they choose Ramban as the name? The reason is because the Ramban came to Israel in 1267, and the Ramban is the one that built the shul in the old city, and he came to the city of Jerusalem when there was no minyan here, and he couldn't find 10 Jews. He went to Shechem and he got Jews. He went to Hebron and he got Jews. So the Ramban is one of the original builders of the Jewish community in Israel 700 and some years ago. And he died here and is buried here. We don't know where his burial place is. The Rambam, on the other hand, came and visited the land of Israel for 6 months. When he came from North Africa, he came to Akko. He came to Syria first, and then he came to Akko. Then he came to Tiberias. He was only here 6 months. And for various reasons that his son writes in a long letter, he decided not to settle in the land of Israel, and he continued to Egypt, where he was the head of the Jewish community in Egypt, in Cairo, and Fostad. So therefore, they gave their main street to the Ramban, and they gave the side street, so to speak, to the Rambam. But they wanted to honor the Rambam. There's a lot of Torah in all of this. They wanted to honor him. You're not the Rambam's going to have the same street like everybody else is going to have. So they made it a boulevard. It's the only boulevard in the neighborhood. And that's in honor of the Rambam. Now, originally the street ended where the boulevard ended, on Alfasi Ibn Ezra. But then the street kept on building all the way down to where it is today, to where it comes down almost to Mitadella, all the way down. But originally, that was it. And it was the fact that it had a boulevard and that it had two one-way streets, you know, going opposite to it. So it had its own importance, a greater importance. That's, of course, before I moved on the street. But that was so the main street was Ramban. Now, if you walk on Ramban between Ibn Ezra and Ibn Gabiro, on the side of the street towards Shari Chesed, you come to a little park. It's got a big frog there. That park originally was a tennis court. It was set aside by Kaufman because the British played tennis, and this was for the fancy Jews. So in Shari Chesed, tennis wasn't going to go too far. But here in Rehavia, how could you have, a neighborhood, a garden neighborhood? You have to have the British mindset of the 1920s without having a tennis court. So that originally was a tennis court. For various reasons, it didn't go in Rehavia either, until Ellie moved here. But until then, nothing happened. And so because of that, eventually it became a park, and it's what it is today, a park for children, a playground. Now, if you'll notice, in Rehavia, there are certain names that we would have thought would be present and are not here. The name that immediately struck me from the beginning is Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. If you have the names of all the poets, for instance, we have the name of Al-Kharizi, of Shlomo Al-Kharizi. Al-Kharizi was the translator of the Pirush HaMishnayos of the Rambam from Arabic into Hebrew. The Rambam wrote it in Arabic, and Al-Kharizi translated it into Hebrew. Al-Kharizi was a poet. We have piyutim from him, but Al-Kharizi is not Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. By the way, we have in Shari Chesed the street of Elozer HaKalir, which is also the great poet and Python of the Jewish world. Difference of opinion whether he lived at the time of the Talmud or he lived later to the 8th century. Tosfos seems to think that he lived at the time of the Talmud. The others say that he lived much later. But, for instance, the first 26 kinos that we have, that we say on Tisha B'Av are from Elozer HaKalir. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the piyut that we say is from Elozer HaKalir, the Seder Avoda. He is the most prolific of all of the Jewish poets, liturgical poets. But Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is the poet of the people. So originally there was a street called Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, but it doesn't exist anymore. The street ran from the tennis court up to Keren Kayemet. Today it's that small little alleyway that leads you past the Machon Ben Tzvi, up the stairs. And the reason that they have to give up the street is because on paper it looks perfect. But when you look at the topography of that hill, they knew that it would not be negotiable, not by horses and not by automobiles, because the grade is so steep. And therefore, they would have to regrade the entire hill. And by then, they had run out of money completely. And because of that, therefore, there is no Rabbi Yehuda Halevi Street. But if you walk that, if you take that shortcut from Ramban up to Keren Kayemet to the post office, you're walking on what should have been the street of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. There's a street here called Haran. That's not its original name. Also, funny story. The original name of the street was Aharon, and it was named after a man who insisted that it be named after him. And after all sorts of bitter quarrels, they dropped the Aleph. So it became Haran. And everybody says, well, it fits in perfectly because the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim ben Ruvain, even Gerondi, who came from Girona in Spain, fits in with all of the other Spaniards here. Part of it, but that wasn't their intention at all. They didn't mean that Ran at all. Now, another reason why, there was a great Rav in Shari Chesed, Reb David Baharan, Beis Hei Reish Nun, and they wanted to name the street after him too. So therefore, Haran includes Baharan in it also. But I'm sure that most of the people who live there are completely unaware of the history of what happened there. What happened is also that that Rehavia was built piecemeal. It was built from 1923 until 1930, and then it was built again from 30 to 35, and then it was built again from 38 to the beginning of the war. Now, the southern part of Rehavia, which deals with all of the Apikorsim, with all of the Haskola people, Brenner, Smolenskin, Achad Ha'am, Sokolov, Pinsker, Sholem Aleichem, Moshe Haas, that neighborhood was called Merchavia. which doesn't mean more Rechavio, it means Merechavio. It's also a word that appears in Tanakh, and that was founded in 1938. So that part is much newer than the part here in Rechavia. And that part was named, the names there were chosen to counteract Shaarei Chesed and Rechavia. Because Shaarei Chesed and Rechavia were all, you know, what shall we say, they were the forces of darkness. Right? They didn't get it. And the secular, because in Israel the struggle is in everything. There is nothing that is removed from the politics and from the agendas and from the struggles that exist within the Jews. So they wanted to show that the greatness of the Haskalah and of their people, and therefore the names of those streets are all names of Haskalah writers. There was a great debate whether to name a street after Chernyakhovsky, Saul Chernyakhovsky, because he married a non-Jewish woman, and because of his open espousal of paganism in his poetry. And so therefore what they did is they moved Chernyakhovsky away from Shaarei Chesed, and this is all true. They moved him away from Shaarei Chesed and from Rechavia, so that it would not be, in other words, we could tolerate Achad Aron or even Brenner maybe, but Chernyakhovsky was too much, so they pushed him on the other side of Rehov Aza, and he's out of the neighborhood completely. Now, the streets that surrounded Rechavia went from Keren Kayemet to Aza. And then the other side of Azo was Merchavia. And then Talbiya, as we know it today, was all Arab until 1948. It was an Arab village. Very few Jews lived there. And in fact, you have the famous lie of Edward Said, the Palestinian professor at Columbia University. So he always writes that he was born in Jerusalem, and that his parents owned home 10 Rehov Brenner, across from the Academy House, and that he's waiting, he's got the key to the house, he's waiting to come back. And so he was exposed a number of years ago that he never was born in the land of Israel, he was born in Egypt, and that the house was owned by an uncle of his, and that Martin Buber rented the house from his uncle, and that the house eventually was bought from his uncle, but that part already was Arab. Basically was already Arab territory. And therefore, Rechavia was very, very self-contained. The main street in Rechavia was considered the Abarbanel, Don Yitzhak Abarbanel, because it was a street that cut through even Shaprut, and even Shaprut was the gateway to go to Shaarei Chesed, and it cut through on the other side to Al-Kharizi, which was the way to get to Ramban. So it was like a through street, even though it curves. And the Abarbanel is naturally named after the great Don Yitzhak Abarbanel, the minister of Spain, the great Meforesh of the Tanakh, and one of the great Jewish heroes that existed in that period of time. Ibn Gabirol is one of the great Jewish poets, Rehov Ibn Gabirol. You'll notice that on Rehov Ibn Gabirol there is a synagogue called Chorev, and in front of the Chorev synagogue there is a poem of Ibn Gabirol, of Shlomo Ibn Gabirol, about how he searches for God. Shachar Avakeshko Elakei Tzuri, in the morning I search for you, God of my strength, etc. So Ibn Gabirol is one of the great, Shlomo Ibn Gabirol is one of the great Hebrew poets. The Sfardim, he wrote a poem called Keter Melucha, which has 199 stanzas to it about the glory of God. And the Sfardim recite that poem, Kol Nidre Night, the entire poem. And I have met people who know the poem by heart. They teach their children to know that poem by heart. He is one of the great poets of the Sephardic world. Now, again, what happened today is...
JM in the AM. We will continue and conclude by Wine's lecture on the streets of Jerusalem, in this case, Rechavia and Shari Chesed, coming up here on a Wednesday morning broadcast.
And therefore, Rechavia was very, very self-contained. The main street in Rechavia was considered the Abarbanel, Don Yitzhak Abarbanel, because it was a street that cut through to even Shaprut. And even Shaprut was the gateway to go to Shari Chesed, and it cut through on the other side to Al-Kharizi, which was the way to get to Ramban. So it was like a through street, even though it curves. And the Abarbanel is naturally named after the great Don Yitzhak Abarbanel, the minister of Spain, the great Meforesh of the Tanakh, and one of the great Jewish heroes that existed in that period of time. Ibn Gabirol is one of the great Jewish poets, Rehov Ibn Gabirol. You'll notice that on Rehov Ibn Gabirol there is a synagogue called Chorev, and in front of the Chorev synagogue there is a poem of Ibn Gabirol, of Shlomo Ibn Gabirol, about how he searches for God. Shachar avakesh cho'elakei tzuri, in the morning I search for you, God of my strength, etc. So Ibn Gabirol is one of the great, Shlomo Ibn Gabirol is one of the great Hebrew poets. The Sephardim, he wrote a poem called Keter Melucha, which has 199 stanzas to it about the glory of God. And the Sephardim recite that poem, Kol Nidre Night, the entire poem. And I have met people who know the poem by heart. They teach their children to know that poem by heart. He is one of the great poets of the Sephardic world. Now, again, what happened, yesterday was the anniversary of the Rabin's assassination. At the end of Ibn Gabirol, when it comes to Ramban, there's a piece that goes to Aza. And when Chaim Lazarov was assassinated, so again, his assassins were unknown, but it was the source of a tremendous rift, again, within the Jewish community, the right against the left. The left said the right assassinated him. The right said that they denied it. The British tried a man by the name of Stavsky, who was a member of the revisionists, for the crime, but he was acquitted. And the irony of ironies is that Stavsky himself was later killed on the Altalena by Yitzhak Rabin. So, only the Lord can figure out all the puzzles. But in his memory, they had to make a street for him, and they wanted to make the street here in this central neighborhood, and they didn't have any streets left, so they made that piece, Arlazarov, which leads down to Aza. Eventually, when Merchavia came, so they extended the street to reach into the other areas that abut here. But the the traffic pattern is such that most people spend quite a bit of time on Arlazarov. That's a famous street that you cannot avoid because the traffic pattern in Merchavia forces everyone onto our Lazarov Street. But that's how that... So there also is a name that doesn't fit with the rest of the pattern of names here in Rechavia, but that was done because of the fact that he was assassinated when he was walking with his wife along the beach in Tel Aviv. Finally, Aza. Aza is an old street. And as the name indicates, if you stay on it long enough, you'll be in Gaza. Because Derech Yafo, Jaffa Street, all of these were streets that led from the old city of Jerusalem. They were caravan trails. And so if you stayed on Rehov Yafo long enough, you came to Yafo. And if you stood on Derech Shechem, you went out Shar Shechem, and you stayed on Derech Shechem long enough, you would end up in Nablus and Shechem. And Derech Aza, if you stayed on that street long enough, you know, for the 100 kilometers or 200 kilometers, you would end up in Gaza. So that street preceded any neighborhoods here, because the road to Gaza was the road from the time of Avraham Avinu yet. And therefore that was the natural boundary of Rehavia until they built Merchavia, which extended Rehavia. There was a whole fight about naming Jabotinsky Street Jabotinsky. Ben Gurion and many of the left opposed any commemoration of Jabotinsky. When Ben Gurion was prime minister, he refused to bring Jabotinsky's remains to be buried here in Jerusalem. He was a great man and a great hater. But when Menachem Begin became the prime minister, one of the first things he did was bring Jabotinsky's remains to be buried on Har Herzl. So then the street is Jabotinsky Street, which again marks the end of a neighborhood, because the other side already, you're coming to the Katamons, you're coming, and all of those were Arab neighborhoods until 1947 or 1948, and the struggle between the Haganah and the Jordanians and the militia of the Arabs, these neighborhoods all became Jewish neighborhoods, and the old city all became Arab, and East Jerusalem all became Arab. So it was like a trade-off of land, but the western part of the city became entirely Jewish. So here we've had a small review of the neighborhood that we live in, of Rehavia and of Shaarei Chesed, and of the people that were instrumental in creating it and the stories that lie behind it. And next week, God willing, we're going to talk about Givat Shaul, which also is a very fascinating story. In fact, every neighborhood in Jerusalem is really worthy of a book by itself. And I appreciate everyone coming. We're starting at 8 o'clock again. Thank you.
JM and the AM, a fascinating series entitled The Streets of Jerusalem. In this first installment, Rabbi Beryl Wein speaking about the neighborhood of Rehavia and Shaarei Chesed.